Yesterday on the show, thank you, Steve. Yesterday on the show, we had a contest, and the winner is from a city called Cherry, Illinois. And we saw it up on the screen, and you were reluctant to say it because you'd never heard of the city of Cherry, Illinois. And I had never heard of the story of Cherry, Illinois. We thought it might have been a misprint or maybe a street name. And then we found out not only is there a Cherry, Illinois, but a horrible, horrible thing happened there about 100 years ago.
Yeah, 1909, we got a little information about this yesterday. 259 people killed in the Cherry mine disaster. And as we were talking about this, the book came up. Let me just explain. They were talking about the smoke that went down into the mines, and it was called Black Damp. So we mentioned this book, Black Damp, the story of the Cherry mining disaster. And on the line with us right now is the author of said book. This is Steve Stout. How are you, Steve?
Hi, thanks for having me on the show. Hi, Bill.
Hi, great to meet you.
You need to give us a little schooling here. We were both born and bred in Oak Forest, and I was in Brookfield, and I never even knew of a Cherry, Illinois, let alone this terrible mine disaster, which changed a bunch of laws. Please explain some of this to us.
Yeah, it's amazing to think that the second worst coal mining disaster in U.S. history happened right here in the plains of Illinois. And they dug a mine out in above a town called Flat, Illinois, which is famous for Rip's Chicken. And this town is about 8 miles north of that, and it's about 100 miles southwest of Chicago. Well, when they first drilled the mine in 1905, they couldn't find the too much quality in the coal, the first couple veins that they dug out. So they went, in the years to come, in the next 3 or 4 years, they went down 500 feet below the surface to find the highest quality of coal that they could. And in November 13, 1909, 480 men and boys went into the mine to work. It was a Saturday, and 259 of them never came home again.
Now, we had read something about these were a lot of immigrants, and as you mentioned, young boys, some as young as 10, went down. Is 500 feet, forgive me for not knowing this, but I don't know if that's like super deep for a mine. Is that your typical depth?
Well, it's deep for a mine when you consider they went down on makeshifts, wooden chicken-wired elevator systems that hauled about 20, 30 men at a time and really just drop you down into the mine. No electricity per se in a lot of the mine, but they did have electricity in the part of the mine that did catch fire. And they had mules working side by side with the men and the boys. So they didn't bring the mules up every day. So the mules had stable areas down underground. So some hay was brought down about 12:30 that afternoon. And it was left underneath one of the burning kerosene torches of that time. Because the mine electricity had shorted out about a week or two earlier. But there were no safety regulations, nothing to stop men from working. Teams, two average men, were paid $1.08 a ton of coal. And a good day for two guys would be 5 tons. So $5.40 between two people. So you can see why brother worked with brother, father worked with son. You can see why if the immigrants who had very little money, very little resources to work with, these people, the story of the Cherry Mine disaster is a story of immigrants in America at that time. And so two guys, $5.40 a day split between two guys. And you could see when the kids were old enough to be pulled out of school, 10, 11, 12 years old, they pulled them out of school and sent them right down the shaft. It's just amazing to think about in 2016.
But Steve,
sure.
What exactly, for a 10-year-old boy, what would his job have been? What could he have possibly have done in a mine at 10?
He could be controlling the mules, taking the mules back and forth up and down the gangways. He could be making sure that the coal cars got to the elevator system.
Yeah.
He could pick up coal along the way and stuff. There were a lot of little jobs that could light and relight the torches in the necessary places, and bring lunch down to the men and stuff. There were a lot of jobs.
No child labor laws at the time, huh?
Not at the time, right? You were supposed to be, according to reports I've read, at least 18 in order to work there, but This became
legally, but it was always ignored and never regulated at all. So there were dozens and dozens of little boys, basically, in the mine working. But that was not seemed to, you know, like now we would see it's so outrageous to think about. Back then, it was just business as usual. And the families needed the money. They wanted as many people from the family working together in the mines. And one of the there's so many amazing stories within this story too, because there was not only when the mine caught fire, people were beginning to get trapped. They had rescue teams of about 12 brave men who went down into the shaft, smoking like a chimney, to rescue their fellow miners and stuff. And they went down six times and pulled choking miners out of the dark tunnels, basically black underground. On their seventh trip down, they were actually dropped into the flames. And when the bell system they had hooked up went crazy with now the townspeople are surrounding the hole, surrounding the main pit right there, the 500-foot hole, heard these sounds. People were screaming, pull them up, pull them up. And when they pulled this elevator, this wooden elevator up to the surface, it was on fire with all the men. The men, all 12 of them, were burning alive. And not only did it signal of the death of these 12 heroes, it signaled the death of everybody trapped underground, because that was the only exit out of the mine.
All right. So we talked to somebody yesterday, and on the anniversary of this, which is in, is it in November?
November 13th.
It, is there some tribute that's paid in Cherry, Illinois?
It's small. We had a very big tribute on the 100th anniversary, you know, some years back. Some years back. But now they have prayer services and, you know, some kind of service, but nothing big and organized. Nothing at all. They used to have, after the mine, they had annual processions and observances, but those are faded into history.
Are there still descendants living in the area of anybody from the disaster?
Not a few, but just a handful, very, very few. And I heard the show yesterday the mine did reopen after the disaster, though.
Really?
It reopened, and it was a very successful mine for a couple years. Could you imagine working back to that mine?
No.
The same people who escaped that their death that day went right back to work because they had nothing. They had nothing else. And another amazing story within the story is that 21 men realized that their path was blocked. They're deep undermined, so they're about, you know, 500 feet below the surface. They were miles away from the main shaft. And they entombed themselves. They sat there for 8 days and only had lights, only had matches, only had any kind of light for the first few minutes that they were in this black hole, again, 500 feet below the surface, miles away from an exit. And they actually just sat down and waited for help or death to come get them. 8 days later, the strongest of them said to themselves, well, we're going to die right here unless we make an attempt to get to the surface. And a lot of arguments within the groups, well, you break down that wall that we built, they're just going to let the smoke in here and kill us all. I said, we're going to die here anyhow. So these four guys, in pitch blackness, crawled over the equipment, the bodies of their dead friends, their co-workers, came upon a work group that was cleaning up near the main shaft. Imagine the word shot up the shaft, miners found alive. Now, there's 259 men and boys missing. And when they brought only 21 to the surface, could you imagine the heartbreak set in again? And it just crushed the town of Cherry. It just destroyed the town. And these men were treated like heroes. And a few of them even went out on a vaudeville circuit to tell about their exploits and how they were saved from the great Cherry mine disaster. And most importantly, the men and boys who died in this tragedy actually saved so many lives because of the workman's comp. Illinois Workman's Compensation Act actually derived from this very disaster. So before, a company was not held liable for the safety of its employees after this disaster and the work that the legislature did companies had to be responsible for the safety of
it. It changed the laws. The book is called Black Damp, The Story of the Cherry Mining Disaster. We're talking to Steve Stout. Steve, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to continue this. I really feel guilty.
Why wasn't this for knowing the story? Yeah, I know.
I feel terrible. We'll continue talking with Steve Stout. Again, the book, Black Damp, The Story of the Cherry Mining Disaster, 312-981-7200. It's Bill Left, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
Hey, Bears fans, or just you, Dan, grab a copy of the Chicago Tribune at Jewel Osco this Sunday to collect your 2016 Chicago Bears Fathead Tradables. Collect all eight now through October the 30th.
We are talking to Steve Stout, and his book is called Black Damp, The Story of the Cherry Mining Disaster in Cherry, Illinois. Steve, we have some callers that want to talk to you, and I want to ask a question just because I don't know much about coal. You have said that there is enough coal in Illinois to fuel the world's energy needs for several hundred years.
Absolutely.
You still believe that?
Absolutely. In a few, but I mean, there's safety issues about how we get it, and there's also, environmental issues of burning this coal, but they have ways to scrub the sulfurs and the chemicals out of the coal now and make it safer to burn. But we got to decide where, you know, as a nation, as a society, where do we want our power to come from, our electricity? Do we want to build more coal-fired plants, more nuke plants, or how should we address this issue in the future? I mean, it's going to be a big thing that we're facing.
Is it true 50% of the electricity we use is still from coal?
In Illinois, it is.
That's amazing.
It came up
to
in
me.
The debate twice last night. They were talking about this issue. So
yes,
it's still very pressing,
and it's still very, very, very dangerous work. It's one of the most dangerous professions that you can be in. And of course, back then, black lung wasn't that much of a problem because it was picks and shovels. That's what we should remind your listeners. It wasn't mechanical equipment at all. It was one pick and one shovel at a time, so it threw up a lot less dust than these massive machines that they used out now that carve up, tons of coal at a swipe. I mean, tons and tons of coal,
sure,
throwing a great amount of dust and debris into the air.
Yeah.
So in some ways, the mining was safer, but you're working with fuels, you're working with open illumination, and you're working with, very makeshift equipment, to say the least.
And there was no government agency kind of regulating the safety issue at all, and that's a huge drawback, and that's probably the reason that this cherry mine disaster happened in the first place, right?
Absolutely. I mean, the minute the electricity in the mine shut down, any other mine, these days, of course, no power, no work.
Right.
But down there, these men reverted back to open flames and basically candles on their hats, and they call them helmets, but they were really just kind of hats that had a little hook on it where you could put the different kind of mines, and most of the lights they had were simple candles. Can you imagine 500 feet below the surface,
no,
miles from the nearest section, working by candlelight,
no,
digging on your hands and knees?
All right.
And
well,
that's your life.
I can't even imagine that. Ann wanted to jump in here. Ann, you had a relative who worked in the shaft of in Cherry, Illinois?
Yes. He worked there not too long. He got out and started a grocery store business, and his daughter is alive and lives in Pontiac, Illinois, but he and Rip were brothers. Their last name was Galandri.
And he survived.
He got out of doing the mine work and started a grocery store in Ladd.
Well, that's
And this was after or before this disaster we're talking about? It must have been after, right?
No, before.
Oh, it was before, yeah?
Was before, I believe. Hmm. I think so. But I know he was glad to get out, and so was were his family and all their members.
Of course.
Because they knew how dangerous it was.
Yep.
But when you're an immigrant and there's no jobs and that's the only job, what do?
You take it.
Ann, thank you for calling. And Jim, you lost some relatives in this disaster? Hi, Jim.
Jim Gambiani here in Wheaton, Illinois. How are you?
Hi, Jim. What happened? You had family members who perished, huh?
Well, yes. All my grandparents came from Italy. And, when I was a young kid, we were raised in a little town called Blandford, Indiana, of about 800 people, right on the Illinois-Indiana border. And that's all they did. They were all doing shaft mines. Both my grandparents died of black lung. But as it related to Cherry, Illinois, that was a story that we as kids growing up in that small town were all made very aware of painfully as they shared with us how other relatives had migrated down through that part of Illinois and Indiana, gone down to Cherry, Illinois to do the same thing and had that tragedy occur. And so my grandfather lost a couple cousins and things of that nature.
Wow.
But when you were talking about it today, it just kind of brought back some memories. At 65 years of age, as a kid growing up in a town of 800 people who did the same thing, and they were all very tight, and distance was not that, you know, though it was far away, they were a very tight family. And so it was just, once you mentioned it today, I just said, you know, I've got to call and just kind of reminisce a little bit about what I was told as a kid growing up.
Well, thank you. We appreciate you sharing those memories. And Steve Stout, Black Damp, the story of the Cherry mining disaster. Why don't they teach this in school? I like I said, we're from here. I don't understand why this is so close to home, and the child labor laws and workman's comp, why this wasn't covered in our history class.
Steve, why would that be?
Well, I work at a newspaper. I work at the Times newspaper in Ottawa, Illinois. And I say that to people all the time, that we have to get these kids interested in their own backyard. When I was taught history, it was back in the late 60s in Galesburg, where I'm from. It was really, I'm going to be honest, boring. For instance, Carl Sandburg was born in Galesburg. He's a great poet, a Pulitzer Prize winner. We should have been force-fed Sandburg. We should have had classes on nothing but Sandburg, his life, how he became this prairie poet and such, and get the kids interested in their own backyard. And I fully agree with you, Bill, that you have to get kids out to touch history, to be history. Star Rock State Park is the beginning of history here in the Midwest. I mean, that's where Father Marquette and Joliet and the French explorers first built the first Christian mission. So Christianity started at Star Rock. The first recorded history started at Star Rock. We got to tell these kids about how important their individual areas are to each other. You get them interested in their own backyard, and they'll spread out that interest to state and national and international issues.
So absolutely. And you've also written a book about Starved Rock, which, you know what, we'll have to book you for another day and talk about that as well.
Yes, I would like to come back and talk to you. I listen to you guys all the time.
Oh.
I think it's very interesting the variety of subjects that you get on there. I mean, who talks about a coal mine disaster, a 100-year-old coal mine disaster? And I thank you for that, because you're bringing a lot of attention to a very important story that changed the state of Illinois.
No question.
I wish we would have known about this sooner, but thank you for shedding light on it. His name is Steve Stout, and you can look for the book Black Damp, the story of the Cherry mining disaster. And we'll talk to you in the future about the Starved Rock book as well.
We'll meet again. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Have a good weekend. We'll take a quick break, and then our own Steve Bertrand will tell you what's in the news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.